Welcome to the Countdown Podcast. This is our review of Nightmare Alley. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Strange with N for Guillermo del Toro's newest film, his follow-up to The Shape of Water. Of course, they're not related.
Not at all.
This one is written by he and Kim Morgan, based on the novel by William Lindsay Gresham. Nightmare Alley, same name. It's produced by del Toro, Jay Milesdale, and Bradley Cooper. It stars the aforementioned Bradley Cooper, Cate Blanchett, Toni Collette, Willem Dafoe, Richard Jenkins, Rooney Mara, Ron Perlman, Mary Steenburgen, and David Strathairn.
Oh, yes.
Pretty massive cast.
No, it's a huge cast.
It's 150 minutes long. We will get back into that. The budget. Always liked this one, Wayne. What do you reckon?
Oh, okay. You know, this is great looking film.
Yeah.
Great looking film.
Not to spoil the best thing about it, but yes.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So I would say I'm going to go 150.
$60 million.
What?
Yeah.
With that cast?
Yeah. I guess. Yeah,
okay, we'll talk about that. That's a bit impressive.
Box office only $9.5 million, so it has not been a hit at all.
No, this is not a mass movie.
No.
This is not a mass market movie at all.
Definitely is not. Let's hear what it's about, first of all, Wayne.
Okay. In 1940s New York, down on his luck, Stanton Carlisle, played by Brad Cooper, endears himself to a clairvoyant and her mentalist husband at a traveling carnival, carny people. And so he hangs out with them, and then he actually starts learning tricks of this mentalism-type trade from her husband. And he starts crafting a golden ticket to success by starting a business to swindle the elite and wealthy. And he hopes for a big score, and soon he hatches this scheme to con this very dangerous tycoon with help from a mysterious psychiatrist who's Cate Blanchett. And that is all I'm going to tell you about this, because you're best off not knowing that much, if you ask me.
Fair enough. Critically speaking, on Rotten Tomatoes, it has 80% of 281 reviews, a positive, with an average rating of 7.4 out of 10. On Metacritic, always a bit lower. 69 out of 100 based on 51 critics, and the audience-based cinema score has an average grade of B on the A+ to F scale.
Okay.
We'll see where we fall in line or not with those scores. Wayne, what did you think of Nightmare Alley?
Nightmare Alley. Okay, so once again, Paul, it's the expectations that mess with you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would say I knew nothing really about this film, and I just happened to grab a trailer right before walking into it, pretty much, right? So what is it about, really? The trailer would have you believe it is this. It's Brad Pitt playing a clairvoyant to
Brad
the rich
Pitt?
And famous. Sorry, Brad Cooper. But, you know, being a clairvoyant to the rich and famous, or the, you know, the upper crust folks in 1941, I guess, around there, pre-war, around
starts,
the war.
Starts at, I think, 1939 and then wound its way to 1941.
That's right. So it works into the war. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool. But of course, because it was Guillermo del Toro, I was in the back of my head expecting, I don't know, a monster. Or something.
Really?
That's what it was.
It was called Nightmare Alley, God
I
damn
know.
It.
I mean, exactly. I thought it was like one of Paul's horrors that he's trying to trick me into watching. Right?
Nope.
So it actually.
Not this time.
No, it's not. And it's actually a drama. I wouldn't even call it a thriller.
It's well, it's marketed as a neo-noir psychological thriller. It's definitely got noir elements, 100% for sure.
Okay, you could get to psychological thriller if you want.
Jeez, you're really trying hard though,
I know.
You?
It's not. I'm being kind about it. So,
kind of like a con movie.
Yeah, it's a grifting movie.
Yeah.
This is like, and so this is the thing. For the first half of the film, or what I thought was the first half, turned out to be the first act. It's fucking long.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked this film. I think it looked good. It was intriguing. The idea of Brad Cooper like going to this carnies and he's like, he's a down on his luck. You're not quite sure who he is, what his deal is, but he gets a job with Willem Dafoe, who's doing a great job there. And just the aesthetics of those scenes and the idea of, oh, we're in a carny in the 1930s. And, you know, very good, nice to look at. It was shot well. Set pieces are nice. And interesting enough where they've got these freak acts that are around the carnival. So it looks good to look at. Okay?
Okay, yeah.
Second act started not terrible, but then it went on to never end.
Uh-huh.
It just, I was sitting there going, fuck, how long is this movie going to go? I expected something that wasn't it. What this movie actually is probably a great story. Like I can see how this would make a lovely novel, right? The way it starts, pitches, ends, things like that. It's a very rise and fall-y kind of, like, this is an epic kind of show. That's fine. But I was expecting Guillermo to pull some shit on me, all right? And he never did, because it's not that movie. And even in The Shape of Water, it had some supernatural element to it.
For sure.
Right? This didn't have that. And you would be well advised to know that walking in, people, because that's the thing that messed with it for me. That and the length was making me go, okay, I was expecting something different. This is a drama. The trailer really oversold the film to me. I was sitting there going, okay. I ultimately, if it was quite a bit shorter, I know we say this all the time, it's just too long. It's just too long. If it was a good 30 minutes shorter,
yeah,
all right,
yeah, yeah.
You would get a better score for me. I didn't hate my time there, but I got bored towards the end. I'm like, you got to end. You got to fucking end.
I don't disagree with you in any way, shape, or form. The length of this film...
You're killing me, Smalls.
It's just, the pacing is terrible, particularly, as you say, during that second act.
Oh!
So much setup because, yeah, look, I guess I'll say this.
Yeah.
The film kind of resets, right?
Yes.
It sets up the character Stan.
Yep.
And his journey, and that's really, it's his story.
Yeah, his origin. Him, excellent. Right?
And then it goes into, there's a hard jump in time, and then we're in a different place.
Another story.
And we need to set up a whole bunch of new characters.
That's right.
The film really is, I think it's badly structured. I think as a novel, absolutely fine. It'd be like part one, blank page, part two,
yeah.
And that would be okay. But in a film like this, which is 2.5 hours long, you feel every minute of it.
Maybe they could have said part two in the film and it might have been a bit better. You know? Because it just says 2 years later.
It does. And it's such a jarring sort of moment. And I'm like, ugh.
That's what it was. The second part, like it was executed fine technically.
Oh,
right?
Technically this film is a marvel.
It's beautiful.
For $60 million, it's gorgeously shot.
Yeah.
It is phenomenally designed production-wise. The costumes, you're
so
normally
good.
The one.
No, so good.
They look so amazing. Good. Everybody looks like they come straight out of that era in terms of, like a noir kind of element.
Yeah, and even if these are down on their luck folks, they're still wearing a hat and a cardigan and pants. And you know what I mean? Like, I really love that kind of shit.
I'm particularly glad that they're wearing pants.
Well, they could be wearing just overalls. I don't know. The point is, it was the 40s. You know, there was a style to the time. So I was kind of cool with that. And that's why I like the first part.
I think all that stuff, the lighting again, there are some shots in this which are just beautiful.
Dude, Cate Blanchett's office, her thing, that's the most beautiful room I've ever seen. All right, it's just wow! Look at this fucking thing.
Yeah, it's a bit ridiculous, isn't it?
But it fits like that. I'm so willing to believe that's her office in the context of this movie. So I loved that. So like I said, it's got its good points here. It just overstayed its welcome. So
it did. The cinematography strong. Sensational.
Yeah, sensational.
Some of these shots with the cars are moving and whatever. I was just like, whoa, this is cool.
Oh yes.
There's no doubt that technically this film is an A. Technically this film is an 80 plus.
Yes.
The film's story, cool. Yeah. However. And the pacing and other than the editing. Clearly the editor, what was his name? I did look this up.
No idea.
Cam McLaughlin.
Okay.
Clearly took a lot of director's notes on this because it just feels like nothing was left out. Nothing. And apparently it was quite the trouble production because COVID came along and screwed everything up and they had to take a big break from producing and whatever else. And then they had to bring everyone back together. So they lost the original composer who often works with Del Toro, Desplat.
Is that so?
Yeah. And so a whole bunch of people had to be sort of replaced and whatever else. And yet... I don't think the film's harmed in that way because, again, it looks so amazing.
It's amazing.
Technically, it's such a marvel. But the story, I'm sorry, it's boring. Not just the film's too long, but this is so incredibly predictable. There's nothing that happens in this film, not one thing that is not telegraphed so far in advance.
Well, see, is this the novel that it's made from?
Yeah.
Is it an old novel?
Yeah, 1946.
Okay, so I can see how this... The conceit of the film would be a thing back then. This is more like a classic story to me.
Yeah, okay.
It's more like a classic story. Like, I kept waiting for some sort of gambit.
Well,
I sort of kept waiting for like, oh, something's going to happen in this third act. And it doesn't really. It's just the same. It's just these are normal people in a normal time. But let's say not say normal people, but like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no supernatural element. And so I think
that's your fault, though, taking that expectation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you're right. I think it's helpful.
And for that reason, I actually am a bit softer on my score because... Okay. I think that was my fault. If I had actually seen that, this is a kind of... The trailer makes it look like there's something odd going on.
Well, yeah, the trailer's stylized, for
stylized,
sure.
But
of course,
yeah.
We know they take that away from the director and the creative team and give it to a studio or a production company to
cut
a trailer.
It got me there, you know. I would have seen this anyway.
I think I said, let's do this.
Sorry, Paul got me there, but I do this thing for a living. So, not for a living, but
yeah, it's not... I wouldn't say it's disappointing, but it's just the story's really bland.
Yeah.
It feels like the script is an excuse to show how good we can make a film look.
That's not a bad synopsis. I think that's the director's style is what brought me here and what kept me there, frankly. Because once the third act, which I'm not quite sure when it starts necessarily, but once it kicks in, I'm sitting there going, I'm feeling the length of this movie.
Oh, God.
And it's almost overtaking my will to see how this pans out. Do you know what I mean? Which is
I watched this as well at the late session. Unfortunately, I couldn't get there.
I went early, but I would have if I
had to work
late.
It was 9:15 start, so by the time the film actually finished, I walked out almost on the stroke of midnight.
You'd be pissed, actually.
I was like, oh, there was only 5 other people in the entire cinema.
No one's hanging around for
hence 9.5 million. So I don't know. This will be a really terribly downloaded episode because no one's going to have seen this film.
No, I know. But
the fact that it comes, the follow-up film from an Academy Award-winning director for an Academy Award-winning film, I'm stunned by how little this is, much play it's getting.
Because what's the last thing he did? Was it Shape of Water?
Shape of Water.
Shape of Water, man. The he won every Oscar kind of movie.
Yep.
Which I love.
Won a whole bunch of them, but yes.
Yeah. I was reading some reviews. I can't remember what you said at the very beginning, but people are actually fawning over this film.
I think this is going to be a lot of four stars. Film Twitter darlings where, yeah. You know, the hoity-toity, like, oh, look at this, isn't it? And it is. It's so well made.
It's gorgeous.
I think we've emphasized that enough.
Yeah.
But there's nothing here story-wise that's going to blow your socks off. And I'm a story guy. You give me a great story, a great plot, I'll forgive a lot of shit about a film. As long as it's engaging, interesting, and surprising. I was counting the moments till the beats that were going to happen happened.
Yeah.
Right, and we'll get into that on the other side of spoilers.
I will admit, I liked what you're referring to in terms of the ending, the reference that was made and then the actual thing that happens. I didn't see it coming, but then again, I don't think like you in a movie. I sit there and go, entertain me. So,
but I don't think you have to give much thought at all to this film to kind of know how it's going to play out.
This is the thing. I had stopped sort of caring by the end.
Yeah, well,
there
you go. That's
a
real problem.
Think about it. It's a real problem. Yeah. Yep. So, but yeah, okay.
All right. Well, that's our basic thoughts on Nightmare Alley. If you are one of the very few people who's made it this far into the review who hasn't seen it, switch off now and come back afterwards. Although, really, we're probably not going to spoil much for you.
No. What do you think it is what it is.
This is not one of those films where you're like, oh my God.
Not at all.
Yeah. All right. Cool. And here is Jack.
You can't handle the truth.
And reality is, the truth here is pretty easy to handle.
Okay. So
sorry, Jack.
You saw everything coming, right?
Oh, look. They set up at the start of the film, the first act, they set up so obviously that someone's going to die by drinking the wrong alcohol.
Yeah. And he puts it right next to each other.
So I'm like, okay, one, that's really dumb.
But that's old people storytelling. Like, if 1940s, you write a novel, it's like, of course they put the poison right next to the same looking bottles of something else.
I should have mentioned, probably on the other side of spoilers, that this film was also made as a film straight after the novel came out. So this is basically a remake of a 1947 film.
I did not know this.
Right.
I wonder what that was like. Anyway.
Not as long. I would hesitate to say.
Exactly.
So I knew that, and once we established that David Strathairn's character is this
mentalist,
I'm like, oh, well, he's going to kill him.
Yeah.
So I had no doubt, even though they filmed, he tries to keep him vaguely, a little bit vague. It's obvious.
Yeah.
Whether he did it on purpose or not.
Now, did he do it on purpose?
Well, I think.
I don't think he did.
The scene.
But I think he didn't mind that he did, that it happened.
I think the scene that happens with the therapy in Cate Blanchett's office, I think it kind of establishes that he has this very subconscious desire to hurt my older male figures.
Oh, because of his dad.
Because of his dad. Right, yeah. So I think whether, I can't tell if it was subconscious or it was conscious, but he wasn't upset by it, was he?
No, he was like, pretty much, that's fine with me. And then he hooks up with a chick.
That was, I have to say, if there was one role here that I thought was really overblown out of proportion in the trailer and in the promotion, Toni Collette's barely in this movie.
No, I actually didn't know. I'll tell you what, one of the nice things about this film was, because I didn't know much about it going in, I didn't know Toni Collette was even in it. I don't even recognize. When I saw her, I was like, oh, it's Toni Collette. And then, yep. Oh, it's David Strathairn. And then, hey, Bill Defoe. What the fuck? All these like people, and I didn't know they were all
cast
in there.
Cast stacked.
Cast is fucking huge. Yeah. Freaking 60 mil. You know what I mean? I guess the one is working.
And that's what I was trying to say at the start without giving it away. Yeah. That's because most of them don't have much to do. They're not in this for very long. They're all kind of, not quite cameos, but very much all and roles. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. The girl.
So Defoe's only in, what, 5 or 6 scenes. Yeah. Toni Collette's in like 4 scenes max. Ron Perlman.
Right, one half. Ron Perlman, exactly.
Yeah. Blinking Miss. Clifton Collins Jr. is playing the guitar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, he's barely in it.
But he's like a character actor who you'd recognize, but he's barely gets a line of dialogue. So it's
no one was doing much. It's like,
yeah,
hey,
so they all came in, did a very short amount of time, got paid commensurately, and that's how they kept the budget down, I think. Obviously, other than Bradley Cooper and Rooney Mara.
No, Bradley Cooper's there the whole time.
Yep. It's his
story. I didn't
even
know it was Rooney Mara. I couldn't even recognize it.
Took me a long time to realize that, oh, okay, yeah, from Girl with Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, and that was, I think that also, who's the tycoon guy? The bad tycoon guy?
Richard Jenkins.
Yeah, he's fucking awesome.
He's good on everything. He was in Shape of Water. He won Best Supporting Actor for that.
And he's so
Cabin
over
in the
here,
Woods guy.
He's terrifying here as the dangerous tycoon. And I'm like, I believe that this motherfucker is a fucking like prick. You know what I mean? Like I get it from him. And so, and his henchman, that dude who's always like
Holt, from your favorite film last year, Wrath
of
Man.
Wrath of Man. Yep, he was great too. He's exactly the kind of number two you would have if you were a cunty old man. like cunty rich old man. Yeah. He's like, okay, this guy's
bored, his loyalty to the
yeah,
degree.
Fucking military kind of guy, whatever. But he's so cool.
The big problem with this film for me, then, if that was an obvious early plot beat, the fact that Cate Blanchett was bad and setting him up the whole way through, I'm like, God, could it be any more obvious?
Wasn't to me. But then again, I had stopped thinking. Like, I was
She may as well have had femme fatale tattooed on her forehead.
Yeah, she was definitely the danger. Because, like, is this the idea here, right? Is the reason she fucking set him up and did all this shit to him at the end because he embarrassed her when they met?
Well, the film does not establish this well enough at all. Again, I think the script
is really bitter as fuck.
Yeah, that's the only explanation. Why did her doctor character, whatever it was, I think she's actually not a psychiatrist. I think it says she's a clinical psychologist.
Mm-hmm. Just like you.
Yeah. I don't have an office like that either, by the way.
Let's get you one.
That she was embarrassed and shamed to be called out by trying to catch him out.
Yeah.
That she then decides, I'm going to carry that. I'm going to fucking ruin this guy.
Yeah, but with like a many-stage plan, which could have gone
all of which
stage.
Depends on him coming to her and buying her. And I'm like, oh.
Like, he put all of his money in her safe. First of all, fuckwit.
Yep.
Right? Open a safe deposit box, dickhead.
Yep.
Put it in a bag. Have Chili Palmer taught you nothing? all right. So that was already very weird. But for her to say, I'm going to help him with one client, let it all happen, leading him hopefully to the next client, which is where I'll really make my play, and then I'll steal all his money, which I didn't know he was going to get.
And even that first client that she helps him with.
Yeah.
Like, did she then know that playing on this woman's poor insecurities about her dead son was going to result in him and her killing...
She didn't know that, but I think that what that was doing was illustrating the fact that, you know, Toni Collette said, don't do the spook show.
Yes.
Because people die, people get hurt, people this. That's what's going on there. So this, which, by the way, that would fucking happen. But like, fair enough. For the movie, for the story, it was a shock when she shot. I was like, holy shit, that bitch is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's very few and far between, but the violent moments are very violent. So
they are.
De Toro doesn't shy away from that at all, which was cool.
Yeah. Which is, again, these are moments that I remember from the movie. And it's cool that when Willem Dafoe is like, this is how you get a geek. This is, you put the opium in there or whatever, and then
as soon as he became a bum and escaped, because I just thought he would die, because that's what typically happens in these kind of noir films. The lead dies because of the femme fatale.
This is so much worse.
Right? Or at least catches them out and gets them caught. Like, that he so as soon as he got away with the rest of the hobos, I'm like, well, he's going to wind up being a geek.
See,
that was nice though. Bring it back. That was okay. I saw that happening from the start of the film.
This is why I'd say it was an old novel, an old writing.
And that
critic.
Is exactly why the novel ends too. Because I did look that up.
Really?
Yep.
Apparently, Bradley Cooper nailed that laugh in one take. I heard that. I read that somewhere.
They really do hang on that, don't they?
They hang on it.
Make it very uncomfortable.
Yeah, because it's good. So, if anyone's listening and hasn't seen the film, there's which is probably most of you, if you just like our voices. Basically, there's a depraved character, which they say is half man, this, that, whatever, and they make him eat a live chicken, and that's like the freak show. And then Bradley Cooper's like, yo, how did you get a guy to do that? And Willem Dafoe says, well, there's a whole process where you actually offer him a drink with a little bit of opium in it.
So it's someone who's a homeless man.
Homeless person, yeah. And then you get him, and that's it. And then at the end of the movie, Bradley Cooper turns into one of those guys because a carny is tricking him that way. And he knows, like, he offers him a drink, says, hey, you can be a geek. You know what a geek is?
That was Tim Blake Nelson.
Exactly. And Bradley Cooper knows what's in this drink. And he knows that if he drinks it, he's going to become an addict and he's going to turn into a geek. And he's so fucked with himself, he drinks it anyway and laughs maniacally. And that's how it ends. It is. Yeah, it is. It was.
It's a dark ending for a dark film.
At that moment when I saw him laughing, I was like, okay, well, finally it's ending. But secondly, see, if you hadn't made me wait so long for that moment, I would have enjoyed it more.
This film could have had 25, maybe even 30 minutes.
30 minutes, bro.
I think
150?
150.
Fuck. Shit.
And we've just heard that Batman is
3 hours.
2 hours.
Yeah, but that's Batman, Paul.
Nevertheless, it's enough already, for fuck's sake.
I'm getting a stadium pal to piss into as I go to the cinema for that one. But Batman is Batman. I'll take a 3-hour Batman movie. I took a 4-hour one with Justice League. I was at home.
And that's too long. Can you imagine trying to sit there in a theater to watch that in one sitting experience? I broke it up and it had parts and I broke that film up. Yeah, there's just not enough going on in this movie to justify its length of time. There's not, and there might be in a Batman film, you have two bad guys, or bad villains, I should say.
Yeah, it's a new take, and whatever else. You already love, so you've got expectations.
Maybe that will justify its length. But there are very few films. They do exist. I do acknowledge
Dances
there are very few films over 2.5 hours that justify their runtime, as far as I'm concerned. Can you honestly say, and this is really important when you're writing, that it should happen at the screenplay level as well, is this bit absolutely necessary to the story? Does it serve the story or does it serve your ego because you like it?
This is the pitfall of being a writer-director, Paul. Mm. Because you wrote it and you directed it, you want it all in there. Yep. So you stick it all in
and
there.
And because he just made fucking Shape of Water,
that's right.
The studio's not going to mess
exactly.
with it.
Okay, man, if that's what you want, yep. go ahead, man.
I point the
jury
towards...
Don't give me notes, motherfucker!
different medium, but point the jury towards Stephen King. Stephen King, love him or hate him, his books are bloated, unnecessarily long. And they've gotten worse, I think, in more recent... Even though he writes more books and does them shorter, there's so much stuff which could just be edited because he's too powerful.
You know? Absolutely.
Yep. He just makes... And arguably, any of these sort of big fantasy series that take off, they become too bloated around minutiae and details yeah. because the author loves their own sound.
Exactly.
I would say probably the same thing about George R.R. Martin if he ever released a fucking book.
Quick aside, did you hear that there's a Stephen King movie being remade? Guess which one it is?
Go on.
Maximum Overdrive.
Oh, no, I haven't heard that.
Well, apparently
so you mean
Joe,
literally
Hill,
a Stephen.
Joe Hill wants to do it. Is that his son?
It is.
He wants to take a run at it. I'm like, what? Okay. Everyone's like, that's the worst movie ever made.
I thought you were about to ruin one of my choices of my most anticipated films of the year list, but
no,
coming up very shortly.
Okay.
All right, look, that is far as I'm, that's all
yeah,
I've got to say.
This film is...
Oh, other than Cate Blanchett is a fucking succubus.
Why?
I know she's got a lot of makeup on here, but nevertheless, that woman's over 50 years old.
Oh, she's beautiful.
The fuck?
Yeah, she's
she
great.
Is
she over
50? Incredible. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm going to look that up while Wayne Vamps gives us his score.
Yeah, I will. Okay, everyone, the best joke that was in 22 Jump Street was...
What?
This is No, wait. I'll bring it back. Was where Ice Cube says to, like, you know, the two guys, is like, okay, because we succeeded, we got carte blanche. We can do whatever we want. We got carte blanche. Later on in the movie, he's like, we've been canceled. And then, like, Channing Tatum's like, but I thought we had Cate Blanchett. Which is an excellent joke. He thought
cancelled.
Our program's being cancelled, but he said he was basically he thought carte blanche.
Oh,
and
Cate
Blanchett. I thought we had Cate Blanchett.
Right.
That is one of the best jokes I've ever heard. Sorry, Paul. We back? Are we back?
We're back. She's 52 years old.
Fuck me. That's amazing. Well, she's so awesome in this, and she's like playing. Because when you play that sort of 1940s, like, it's easy to fuck that up. But I'm sitting there going, you know what? This is a novella worth watching, kind of thing. It's
she's incredible. Very, very classy.
Very, very cool.
All right, that's our thoughts on Nightmare Alley, Wayne, then. Let's give it a score. Let's find out whether the year of Negatron continues when Wayne just suddenly pumps it up by 20 just to avoid that.
It's like I'm an open book. No, it's not. I was thinking about this as well. No, it's a 58.
Oh, jeez.
It's a 58.
57 from me.
Oh, yes, fuck you.
We're right on the same page. I could have lied and pushed it up to 59. I have given it 3 stars, soft 3 stars.
Yeah, because it's still so well made that I can't call it a bad
film. No, it's not a bad film. It's too long.
It's
too
long,
indulgent.
It's overbloated.
And it's just not interesting enough.
The payoff isn't enough for you to have sat there for that long, is what it is.
The payoff
is still a good show.
The payoff is how beautiful, how gorgeous, how well made this movie is.
Exactly.
And the story is secondary.
Mm.
Yeah. That's our final thoughts then on Nightmare Alley. What did you think? You can let us know via email, thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter @thecountdownpc. You can like and follow the show through Podbean, where we host, and check out the Facebook list community where all the cool cats hang. Along with us from
time, right? I've heard.
Link is in the show notes. And that's it from us today. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
What the hell are you... No! No! No!
150-minute films.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry, everyone. All right. See you later.
Sorry like a fox. I don't even know what that means. Okay, see ya.
See ya.